All right, so here's the deal. Things are changing fast in the tech world and the internet marketing world. And that's a big deal because you have to know which trends to stay on top of in order to market better, in order to acquire customers for cheap, and so you can run your business as efficiently as possible. Staying on top of all those trends is a pain in the butt, though. And so the folks at HubSpot have made this amazing report. It has a very official sounding name because it is a very official document. It's the 2024 State of Marketing Report. They've looked at millions, tens of millions of bits of data to find the top marketing trends that have the most immediate impact on your business. And so what HubSpot did was they surveyed over 1,400 marketing pros from across the world, and they looked at what are people using effectively, what's not working, more importantly, and they've been able to compile it in a really easy to read document. So if you want to learn ways how to optimize for social or how to boost engagement or how to strike the right balance between privacy but still being personal with your customers, go to HubSpot.com/state of marketing to get the free copy, or just Google HubSpot State of Marketing and it'll come up. Check it out.
This episode is brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network. What? What is the HubSpot Podcast Network? That's right. It's a new thing by HubSpot. They started with our podcast, and now they're branching into more and more podcasts with experts in different business areas. So you might have a podcast about marketing or sales or operations or customer service. And we're going to go over through the different podcasts on this network. Some are more entertaining. Some are more informational. Some are a good mix of both. That's what we try to do here. And HubSpot's goal here is to have on-demand mentors. So if you're an entrepreneur, you're a startup, or you're scaling up, you're going to be able to hear practical tips and inspirational stories by listening to the different podcasts on their network, which, by the way, I think this is a smart idea. Too many brands just try to sell you their thing. HubSpot, I love their approach here. They're like, let's put out great, valuable, free content and help more companies succeed. And the more companies that we help succeed, the more will eventually come back to us, sort of like a good karma kind of thing. So listen, learn, and grow with HubSpot Podcast Network, HubSpot.com/podcast network.
All right. So I love huge companies. I love big visions. I love all that stuff. But a lot of people complain to me when they listen to the podcast. They go, Sam, I like these big, huge ideas, these $100 million, billion-dollar ideas. These are fun to discuss, yada, yada, yada. But I wanted to know about something that I can just create a great living on, let alone, I mean, I don't care if it gets big. I just want to make a living. And today is a great episode that addresses that. So this is an old episode that Sean did a couple years ago. And the guest is one of my best friends. His name's Ramon Van Meer. He created a content site that was making something like $400,000 a month in profit. And he eventually sold it for close to $10 million in cash. I was a small shareholder, and I got to see the behind the scenes on how he built it, and it was really cool. And Ramon inspires me for a couple reasons. The first is that he's an immigrant, he's a single dad, and he came here without a lot of opportunity in front of him, and he kind of made it work. And Ramon's a bulldog, he just gets it done, so he's inspiring. But it's also exciting because I love content businesses a ton, and I know a lot of you love content businesses, and this story is about a content business, and not just any content business. It's about one that might shock you. It's about soap operas. Yes, soap operas. Ramon Van Meer built this company called Soap Hub that was the most popular soap opera website, kind of like TMZ or episode recaps, but for soap operas. It was the largest in the space. It was one of the largest soap operas blogs in the space. It only took him about 24-ish months to build this thing. And in this episode, he goes through a lot of detail on how he got traffic. So we got a lot of traffic from Facebook groups, which is something that you can still do, by the way. Facebook groups crush it. They crush it for my company, and they're still great. And he goes step-by-step how he did that. He also talks about how he hired writers. He talks about how he monetized through advertising. It's just really fascinating. And this is the type of company that, if you're listening and you're willing to spend 40 hours a week doing it, I would bet everything that if you give it 6 months of 40-hour work weeks, you totally can start a company like this that makes a really good living. And so this story is great because we're going to talk about a small business, so something that grew to like 5 million-ish in sales in a very short amount of time. And 5 million seems like a lot, but it started small, like a couple grand a month, and then tens of thousands of dollars a month. And whatever. It's really good. So it starts small. Second, it's about content. A lot of people are interested in content businesses. Ramon didn't know anything about the content business. In fact, he's an English as a second language type of person. So he's not that great of a writer, but he built a really cool content business. And it's kind of like a puzzle to him. And he'll talk step by step how he did that. And third, a lot of people say follow your passion. Some people say don't follow your passion. I err on the side of I tend to start stuff that I really care about, but not Ramon. I mean, he's a 40-year-old dude, single dad. He doesn't watch soap operas, but he built this really wonderful business on soap operas because he's not passionate about soap operas. He's passionate about building companies. And I think most of you probably fall into that category. So you have to listen to how this guy builds his life. It's so fascinating because there's no excuses to why he's not going to succeed. He just says, I don't care. I'm going to do it. I'm going to get it done. I'm going to run through a wall. I'm going to make it happen. And Ramon is one of my best friends and he's a huge inspiration to me. He's one of my mentors. He's a person I really look up to. And I think you guys would like the story. He's going to talk about how he built Soap Hub. You can find it now, soaphub.com. He sold it for something like $9-ish million. And he's going to talk about that story about how he grew it and he sold it. And Sean does a really good job of asking questions. So give it a listen. See you.
At this point, it's a money printer.
I was very lucky that in content, you, with a very small team, very low overhead.
And we're talking monthly, you're pulling in
between $400,000 and $500,000 in revenue.
What's up, guys? Sean here. I'm doing a special little introduction to this episode from my phone. This week's conversation was with Ramon Van Meer. And Ramon is a really interesting dude. And this episode is going to be different than most episodes. I would say that majority of the guests, when I have them on, they are intimidatingly smart. When they're talking to me, it's pretty obvious within 5 minutes that I'm the dumbest person in the room. And I just try to ask questions so that let them talk and let them tell their story. And I just do my best to keep up. But Ramon is not a genius. And that's what I'll say. Our buddy Sam, who introduced us, he says it differently. He calls Ramon like, he just tells him, you're so dumb. You're the dumbest smart guy I know. And he means it with love because what Ramon does is he doesn't overcomplicate things. And you're going to hear that in his story. For example, the essence of his story, and he'll tell you better than I will, but it's he, you know, wanted to start a blog. He just looked at what was already popular, and then he started a blog in that little niche. He bought a $49 WordPress template because he doesn't know how to code. He outsourced the writing to some freelancers because he doesn't know how to write. And somehow, some way, just did those simple things and built the most popular blog about a subject that he doesn't even really know. It's a soap opera blog, like, you know, Days of Our Lives, Young and the Restless, that's like soap operas. And he's never even seen an episode of a soap opera. And so somehow this guy who can't code, can't write, and never watched soap operas built a blog filled with daily stories about soap operas. And, the business started printing money, generating, hundreds of thousands of dollars a month before selling it for about $9 million. And so Ramon is one of the most humble guys I've ever met in Silicon Valley. Very good at just keeping things simple. And if you take nothing away from this, it's to remember that you don't have to be a genius and you don't have to have some super complicated high-tech business plan to make it work. Sometimes if you just find a niche that has a lot of passion around it, you can build a very simple business, and he's going to tell you about that. So hope you enjoy the episode. If you do, leave a review, shout me out on Twitter, do something so that I hear you guys. That's what gets me excited to keep making the show happen. I don't have to do the show. I do it because I love it, and I really appreciate everything that happened after the first episode. All right, enjoy. Okay. Ready to go?
Let's do this.
All right.
Sometimes I get asked to do a podcast or an interview, and I'm a shy person in groups, so I don't really like to do TV or interviews. I don't like to talk too much about myself. It's just, I don't know why. So sometimes it gets awkward. A friend of mine asked me to do a TV segment for him. It was not a TV, like national TV. Nobody would really see it. But as soon as he hit the record on the camera, then I started mumbling and
froze.
I froze, yeah. So
all right, well, we'll
I'm going to do my best.
We'll try not to freeze. This one's informal without even doing an intro. So I'm doing a podcast. Yeah. The podcast is called My First Million. And the idea is I want to talk to different founders, entrepreneurs like you who have hit their first $1 million, million downloads, million subscribers, something, some huge milestone. And I want to find out how they did it. And so I wanted you to come on because you have a wild wild story about how you hit your first million.
Yeah.
Very unorthodox, very different than, you know, even most of the Silicon Valley success stories. Mm-hmm. Yours is totally different. So let's start with the very simple question.
Yes.
How did you make your first million?
All right. Nobody will guess this, and nobody believes it when I tell them. I started a blog about soap operas. It's a news blog that will write about the running soap operas. And
we're talking like Days of Our Lives,
yes.
Young and the Restless.
Exactly. And the first question people always ask, oh, are you a soap opera watcher? Because especially when they see me, you know, then they cannot believe it. Up to now, I've not watched one episode of any soap opera. But yeah, that was the website I built. It and sold it in 3 years later.
Wow. So the story is going to be you decide to make a soap opera blog.
Mm-hmm.
God knows why.
Yeah.
You somehow were able to make a soap opera blog successful despite never watching a soap opera. And
yeah.
You sold it how long ago?
10, 11 months ago.
All right. So 11 months ago, you sell it for, say, 9.5 million?
A little bit below 9 million. 8.75
million cash.
Cash, yes.
And this isn't like a Silicon Valley, like you own 4% of the company. This was your company. You owned, and there's no outside investors.
Right? I had no investors. I bootstrapped it. I had some advisors. I think I owned like 98% still.
Wow.
And then I gave, you know, some shares or some profit to employees, but yeah.
Okay, love it. So we're going to go in. So how does this start? Why even create a soap opera blog to begin with?
Yeah, I started this and I called the golden age of Facebook, where you can basically create a fan page about any topic and very cheap and fast could build a huge fan page. And back then, the news feed algorithm was still in favor for publishers. So whatever you posted, a lot of your fans will see it.
So are we talking like the BuzzFeed Upworthy days when they were getting a ton of traffic off Facebook?
Yeah. So I knew, okay, how to drive traffic from Facebook to a website. I just didn't know what the topic would be. So is it should I sell a product or a service or content? If a content, what kind of content? So I just...
And take me back. Are you just at home alone in a room thinking about this?
Yeah.
You're just brainstorming on in a whiteboard.
800 square feet apartment, me and my son together, and just brainstorming ideas.
And what was your son's ideas? What was he thinking?
Actually, he has good ideas, actually, but it's more games. But he always comes with these really interesting thoughts that I never think of. And then, hey, he has a good point.
Right.
But yeah, going back to the Facebook, I started 10, 11, 12, I forgot, different fan pages about different topics. So one was about pets, marijuana, soaps, politics. And I would just drive some traffic to it or build some likes, paid, and then post some random pictures and then see the engagement. So some fan pages really bomb. I had 10,000 fans. I post a picture and I get 2 likes or whatever, right? Okay, horrible engagement. But there were 2 topics that really stood out. One was soaps, the other one was politics. And this was even before the craziness that... you know,
before Trump.
Yes, exactly.
VT.
Way before Trump. Politics, I really didn't like, because especially, you know, one side was more engaged and everything against what I believe in. So I dropped that actually after 2 weeks. And then I saw the soap opera fan page doing, you know, a lot of people sharing and commenting and liking, even though I made a lot of mistakes posting the wrong actors. Like I posted pictures of people that were not in the show and things like that. But the engagement was crazy.
The engagement was probably higher then. People got outraged.
Yes, exactly. So I built a simple WordPress site. I bought a team from Team Forest, put it on WordPress, used Photo.
And are you a technical guy? I mean, what's your... Because a lot of people get stuck, right? You know, hey, I want to build this website.
Yeah.
I can't code. Do I go learn Python the hard way? Do I go buy this course and try to become a developer? Do I try to outsource it?
Yeah.
Do I try, you know, a WordPress theme?
So I think that's why we live in such a great time, right? Like you don't actually need to know a lot to get stuff, you know, built. WordPress, it's so... Or Shopify, if you want to start selling something, Shopify is very easy. And if you want to build a content site, WordPress is also. So I am technical, but I didn't code anything to build. Like this website I built in a couple hours was a WordPress, a team, a very simple logo. Because I'm just a believer, like trying a lot of different things.
Fast.
Fast. And then see if something works, then you know, optimize or make it better or make right. it look better or faster, just things like that. But, you know, I try to prevent spending too much time in the pre-launch phase where, like, I made those mistakes too. When I was younger, I had a business idea and then I took weeks to design a business card and a website. And eventually after months of hard work and then the idea didn't work. Right. So now I'm the opposite, just quick. So a couple hours, very ugly site. Now I had the problem. I don't know anything about soaps. And as you can hear, I have an accent. English is not my first language. So writing is also not my strong point. So I went on Upwork. Back then it was called Odesk.
So this breaks all the rules, by the way. It's,
yeah.
You know, founder market fit. Zero.
Passionate.
Passion. Zero.
Exactly.
Skill set. Zero. Yeah. Can't write. I decided to start a blog.
Exactly.
But you knew one thing. So if we're recapping the kind of what you had, what you didn't have. All right, that's the stuff you didn't have. Mm-hmm. But sounds like what you had was you knew that at least for this time period, there was a cheap way to buy likes on a Facebook page.
Correct.
And then whatever that Facebook page is, and you tried 20 of them, mm-hmm. WWE and pets and whatever. And then take that traffic on the take the likes on the Facebook page, turn it into website traffic.
Correct.
And so you did your testing period. You decide soaps is the one I'm going to do because the engagement's high using the data. It's all good. And now you got your blog up, but you don't have the content wheel going.
Yeah. So went on a website called Odesk. It's where you can hire freelancers from writers to video editors to anything you can imagine. Put an ad out. Hey, I'm starting a soap opera blog. I'm looking for a writer. And very lucky, I found an editor, writer, that used to write for a print soap opera magazine 20 years ago. She watched all the shows. She's in the industry for many, many years, so she knows the storyline.
That's how people used to solve this problem. They would buy the magazine and it would talk about that week's drama in the soap. And then magazines just were too slow for the new world.
Yes, exactly. So that was also a luck that there were competitors, but it's like the old school media competitors. It was like these magazines that have been around for 20, 40 years.
What's like a magazine that covers soaps?
The biggest one is called Soap Opera Digest.
Okay.
It's been around, I think, 40, 50 years.
Straight to the point.
They have a website, but their main focus up to the last couple of years was always their magazine.
Yeah.
So it was,
you love that because you see this incumbent who's, you know, they're from the print world. They have a website. Website's like a PDF, basically.
Yes, exactly.
So you know, when you see that the website reminds you of a PDF, it's like, this is a good market to go.
It's a good market. So found her, started with one article a day and just test out and see how it works. Up to now, actually, she's still working with the new owners of
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so she starts cranking out content. And give me your mindset. I mean, are you pretty certain that this is going to work? How are you paying the bills at this point? Like, take me back to, because I know it works, right? The spoiler of this podcast, shit worked out, sold the company, you know, that worked. So, but I think it's important to go back when it wasn't clear that it was going to work.
Yeah.
You have some belief, but like, again, I want to know, how were you paying the bills? And then what was your certainty level on this? Or were you still hedging your bets with other things?
Yeah. It's always easy to look backwards, like, you know, oh, of course it's, you know, it works. In my case, every person I told this idea to told me, you know, you're crazy. Like, it's never going to work. Soaps, like, who watches that?
And why didn't you listen to them? You're just a stubborn guy or what?
Yeah. And because, you know, I like to keep trying things until I see it doesn't work. And then I go to the next idea. I saw the engagement. So going back, it took 4 or 5 months before I really started seeing good amount of traffic to the site. Because the problem with content, you need a lot of traffic to really make money. Mm-hmm. You know, back then I was just using only Google ads, so the banners on my website. Even after a couple of weeks, I made like $2 a day and then $4. You know, I couldn't, you know, I paid more for the article than return. But what kept me going was that the engagement on the fan page, like the fan page, I only had to pay the first couple of weeks, you know, I think to 20,000 or 30,000 likes. After that, the fan page just grew organically. Whatever I posted got so many shares. And I did see an opportunity. Okay, there's not a lot of competition. The fans are super engaged. It's content that is every day. Like, soap operas are aired every single day for 52 weeks straight. They have some blackout dates, but basically it's every
These are new episodes.
New episodes every month from Monday to Friday. So apparently they record a bunch of them on the same day, like 5, 6. It's very very basic, meaning like their sets. It's right. Just the actors. Like, I think even the directors are in a booth upstairs, and then they just crank out, you know, with all the respect of the soap opera, you know, actors. It's not like a Hollywood, you know, right. set.
It's not Game of Thrones we're talking about.
Yes, exactly. So it's a lot of content. And when you write about a topic or you think about, you know, starting a content site, you also want to think, okay, is there going to be enough content to write about? So for example, if you do a Game of Thrones blog, you're kind of limited because it only airs 2-3 months. I don't know, actually, year.
This season was 6 episodes, and now it's done.
And it's done, right?
So six Sundays.
Yeah. So that's not a lot of content.
But to be fair, are you a Game of Thrones fan?
No.
Okay. So to be fair, you could write an infinite amount of content just complaining now about the ending and the last season. So
start a petition.
A petition. Exactly.
All right, let's talk about one of the most important parts of any business, your CRM, right? This is where you see who are my prospects, who are my customers, who are my hardcore customers. And you want to have conversations, you want to have information about them that goes throughout all stages of the customer journey. So HubSpot's CRM platform, it's easy to align your team using the features that they have, like their messaging tools, live chat, email templates, and having a unified system of record. So how does it work? You can install live chat on your website, and this will let sales and customer support talk to your prospects. You could send marketing emails on behalf of your sales reps to your customers. You can have prospects book meetings with your reps without wasting time. And all of this is stored in one unified system of record so that teams can get access to all of your contact history. Why is it so important to have live chat and a unified system of record, you ask? Great question. It's because when all your systems are separate, you're just cobbling together data from one place and data from another. It's all disjointed. There's no single source of truth. What I like when I'm the CEO of a company is to be able to click one button and see who are our customers, where are they at in the journey, how do we quickly message them, how do we get them moving forward to success. So that's what it does. That's HubSpot CRM. And if you want to learn about how you can scale your company without scaling complexity, go to HubSpot.com.
So soap operas had this unique property. Daily content, new content every day. And I mean, what is your article about? Is it, here's the recap of what happened in case you missed it. Was it like speculation of what's going to happen? What was the content like? Or was it just pure clickbait on Facebook of like, see which character you are on this, you know, quiz?
Yeah. So because I didn't know anything about the audience, I had to learn like, what do they like? What did they read? So I tried everything, but it was very obvious. People like to read what's going to happen tomorrow or the next day or next week. So
like spoilers. A theory or a spoiler?
Yeah, really spoilers.
Okay. And just like the answer. This is what's going to happen.
Yeah, like, oh, Jake is going to, you know, leave Mary tomorrow, you know? And that kind of articles really
did well.
Did well. Like, I think 80% of our traffic came from spoiler or spoiler-related articles.
Unbelievable.
Then, of course, we did, you know, to get more content out, because the more content you put out, the more traffic you get, you know, more traffic, more revenue. So we wrote about recaps for the people that missed an episode. We did, you know, what Days of Our Lives character are you? But it was more a quiz to capture emails. I really used that as an email list building tool that did really well. Like, we built over 300, I think close to 350,000 emails we collected with these, you know, silly quizzes.
Right. You said the first few months you're trying to get traffic, first 4 or 5 months, not very much traffic, you know, $2 a day in AdSense type of thing.
Yeah.
But you keep going because you see the engagement.
Yeah.
And did you have a day job at the time? I mean, how did you live? You know, it's you and your son at home. Yeah. How are you paying the bills?
Yeah. So I had an online travel agency company before with my previous business partner, and I sold half of my shares, and the new buyer that's bought my shares paid a year long every month. Right. So that was exactly what I needed to pay my bills. So that was, you know, was my luck that, you know, I could then, you know, just do other things.
And are you the type where, you know, did your mind ever go, I should just get a job? Or were you just bullheaded of like, no, I need to create these websites and own them and make a business out of that?
Yeah. I've been an entrepreneur, like I've done so many different businesses. Like, I had some jobs when I was 18, 19, but basically I always had my own companies. So it was never a thought of, okay, if the soap doesn't work, I'm going to go get a job. It was actually, if soap doesn't work, I'm going to figure out something else.
Right. I'll try pets. I'll try politics. I'll try something else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so, all right, so let's jump back in. So you're building up the traffic, and what was the inflection point? Why did things go from a little bit of traffic, a little bit of ad revenue to, give me a sense, where did the traffic get to over time? What was like the peak of it? Of traffic,
it was like very slow, like flat almost, but very little bit uphill. Like, and then suddenly, yeah, we started growing much faster because I was starting to collect emails. Mm-hmm. Starting when a person came to my website, I asked, "Hey, do you want to get a push notification?" So I started to diversify my traffic sources, not just Facebook. And then, yeah, 4 or 5 months into it, then it started doubling every day. And then the growth went really fast, actually.
Awesome. And you're buying traffic at this point still? Or at some point, did you just stop buying and you just started making the content and people shared?
Yeah. So I only bought the first 40,000 likes at below 1 cent per like. So it was very cheap. After that, it was all organic.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I only started boosting posts on Facebook, like buying, you know, like paying for traffic a year after.
So we're talking like you spent hundreds of dollars.
Yeah.
My math's not great, but I think that one penny, something like that, you spent under $1,000 total.
Yeah.
Unpaid for this website,
mm-hmm.
built that asset up into something that you were able to sell for almost $9 million.
Yes.
So that's a tremendous, tremendous type of return. Is that what you thought was possible, or
no?
Were you thinking this will make me $10K a month and then I'll figure something else out?
Yeah. When I started, I thought, because I was in, you know, I sold my shares. Okay, what am I going to do next? I know I like internet marketing and I was always, you know, doing marketing stuff, where buying some small websites, selling them or building them from scratch. And so I thought, okay, this could be a fun project that maybe makes me, you know, 20K a month. And, you know, that will be, I didn't know, like, you know, my first goal was $100 a day. And then very quickly was $1,000 a day. And then I thought, oh man, this is $1,000 a day. This is amazing. But it kept growing.
And the thing I love about you is you're so different than all my other friends here, where a lot of people, you know, you live in Silicon Valley. There's a lot of people who love self-promotion. I'm one of them. Started a podcast. But a lot of people who love Twitter, they love talking to people. They love meeting people. They go to networking events. They host dinners.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do any of that shit.
No.
You're like a, you know, solo guy who just makes shit happen. And that's really all you're interested in. It's just that very singular laser focus. So when this is happening, my question is, how do you celebrate? How do you get ideas? So when you're hitting these milestones, is it just kind of you doing a fist pump in a room? Are you talking to somebody? You're just telling your son? How did you celebrate? And then I also want to know, how did you get your ideas of, hey, I should do push notifications, I should do these next things? So tell me a little bit about both those.
So once we started making money, one thing that I learned is that reinvesting right away back in the business. Like, I was only making maybe $5,000 a month, and then I hired a full-time person because I knew, okay, even though – business-wise, it's probably not smart. Like, you don't make enough to afford that. But I just did it because I knew I could then focus on growth. And then that person can focus on the day-to-day things. So after probably 6 to 9 months, you know, I got a small office and then got first employee. I got some freelance remote people writing and helping out some freelancers. The audience is so passionate that it was very easy for me to find, you know, people that just want to work for free.
Right.
Yeah, like, you know, help post stuff on Facebook and things like that. But that's the journey of the entrepreneur. It is often like lonely, especially if you're still in the phase of working from home, because you have no people around to celebrate.
Right.
Ideas I got from, you know, because I love doing it. Like, it's a super cliche, but, you know, I don't see it as work, right? Like, it's my hobby. If I'm not, you know, I love reading. I love, you know, coming up with growth, like hacks and you know, ideas on how to drive more traffic. And
yeah, this might be the entrepreneur test, right? If you're listening to this right now and you're like, you know, those like Viagra commercials where it's like they describe 50 symptoms at the end, half a second.
Yeah.
It's like, if these belong, you know, if any of these apply to you, please go see your doctor.
Yeah.
The way I see what you're describing is the, if any of these apply to you, please become an entrepreneur, which is like most people that you meet, they work their sort of 9 to 5 and the objective is to turn off their brain and turn off the work part of their brain. So can't wait to, you know, go home, get off that, you know, the weekend is here. All right. Fantastic. Oh no. Monday is back. Now I have to go apply my brain to this thing that I don't necessarily want to be thinking about.
Yeah.
Whereas it seems like for an entrepreneur, there's a certain level of curiosity and obsession that just makes it where you can't turn that part of your brain off. You're always thinking of ideas.
Yeah.
And so that's the, you know, if those apply to you, please go see, you know, please go see your doctor, please go see your investor and yeah. go get a check to start your business.
It's true. And it's a blessing and a curse at the same time, because I cannot, I was this morning talking with somebody and I said, even if I want to, I cannot turn off the switch, mm-hmm. right? So it's very hard for me and for my family, actually, for me to go on vacation.
Right.
Like,
you're
even
not, you're not a great date.
No. even on vacation, I work. Of course, I will combine it with doing stuff. You know, I have to do that for my son. It's always spinning, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So it's a blessing and a curse.
So you were saying that's how you're getting ideas. You mm-hmm. were just constantly thinking of different things to try. Were you looking at competitors? Yeah. Were you talking to advisors? Or what was your method to get new ideas?
So I like to reverse engineer shit, right? So I always look at first at the direct competitors. So if you want to do something, look at the market, the competitors that are out there, and then see what they're doing right and what are they, you know, not doing so well, and just pick ideas from that. Then I looked at, you know, sites that were not competitors, but are doing great in content in general. And then just had, you know, oh, they, you know, they're building a list with push notifications. Oh, let me try that. Oh, I see here in quiz, you know, figure out what kind of dog you are. Hey, maybe we can, you know, change this into a soap opera actor quiz, right?
Right.
Stuff like that. And then
you're not trying to be a genius. You're trying to get the result.
Yes.
If yes. somebody else has an idea that's getting good results,
yeah,
you'll try it.
Yeah, reverse engineer.
And you told me, I think, maybe the first time we went out to dinner, because mm-hmm. I was like, it was something around why soaps? Why did you even try soaps to begin with? And you had said something like, tell the story where you said you saw somebody selling a website like yeah. this. And he, you know, the guy was asking for $100,000. And you were like, I mean, I don't even have $100 to give you for this, yeah. but if you're selling it for $100,000, that means there must be some value here. Is yeah. that how it went down for that
yeah.
part?
So still to now, I always like to look at these marketplaces where people buy and sell websites. I think you can learn a lot. They write a whole summary and give access to the P&Ls. And then, so you
what's an example? Where would I go if I wanted to find websites that are for sale?
Quiet Light Brokers is actually one of the biggest ones. It's like a real estate broker where they have a couple of website listings and then you can buy or sell.
Right. I was on there this morning, actually. I was looking at, when I went to Quiet, because I hadn't heard of Quiet Light. I had seen some of the different Shopify buy sell ones, and I went to Quiet Light, and you're right. I mean, you just see, hey, I have a business. I sell leather products and I'm doing $2 million a year in sales.
Yeah.
Hey, that's kind of interesting. Let me see, you know, whether you want to buy it or you want to take inspiration and sort of come up with similar businesses.
Exactly.
That's a strategy.
Yeah. It's a really good way to get inspiration and then see. So maybe you look at the summary, you look at the website, you look at the numbers, their P&L, and you say, wow, they're already doing $2 million, but their site is shitty and, you know, like
the opportunities to add value.
Add value. And then you can either decide, okay, maybe I see if I can buy it, or you start from scratch. I had no money. So in that same period when I was building those fan pages, I saw a listing on Flippa about soap operas and read the summary and I thought, this is interesting. And, you know, but the price was way too high. It was $100,000. So I said, okay, let's just, you know, see and just build it from scratch ourselves.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like real estate, right? You go, you know, you see these listings, you say, hey, go raise the rents. But sometimes if you have no money, the beauty of the internet is it's like you can go build a building just like that. You know, in the real world, okay, well, I can't go build my own building. But what you were able to do in maybe 6 to 8 months was you built your own building. Hey, I can't buy that one, but I can build my own.
Yeah.
And so at what point did you realize this is going to work? This is going to be successful at a scale that is even bigger than I originally thought. What was that turning point?
I still remember it was December, I think, 27. It was when I was testing different articles and different times to post and different things. But that day was the first day we made $100, but it was really calculated. Okay, we post on this time, this kind of article, and it all sort of fell into place.
So you made $100, but you knew you would make the $100. It was it was not luck.
No,
you had a system.
Like, yeah, I was working on a system and it was kind of working, but now it was like it fell in place. Okay, now the strategy, the blueprint, it's working. Mm-hmm. And then now it's just a matter of scaling, you know, getting more fans to the fan pages, building, you know, find different ways to get traffic and you know, more content. So now it was more a matter of scaling so to speak.
And what worked with scaling? What were some of the techniques that really worked?
The biggest was building the email list. That was also a huge hedge because back then this was before Facebook, you know, started screwing up the newsfeed, so to speak, right. The algorithm. So once Facebook was doing that, every publisher, including me, we saw a huge drop in reach. So less and less people would go to our site from Facebook. So I had to hedge that risk, so to speak, by building an email list and also Facebook groups. So up to today, actually, Facebook groups are still really, really powerful.
And did you see that coming, or was this a reaction? Oh, shit, Facebook turned off the traffic. We better do something. Or did you sort of anticipate that?
The first time around was on this, like, nobody really knew. And then, you know, the news came out and then suddenly the traffic came down. But the second time, the big update, by that time, I had a couple advisors. One, Sam Parr, who runs The Hustle, and another advisor that used to work at Facebook. So, you know, he told me, you know, like in big lines, like, you know, okay, I don't know exactly how or what or when, but I know, you know, Mark Zuckerberg's vision is really, you know, not pro-publisher, so to speak. You know, he really wants people, you know, so make sure you hedge, like, you know, focus on Facebook groups and focus on getting into, you know, as you know, Google News and things like that.
So a little birdie told you.
A little, hey, I had, you know, yes.
You should look at this.
Yes.
I strongly emphasize that, yes, you should look at this.
Don't put all your eggs in one basket. And still to today, like when I buy or sell or buy start a site, it's like I want a diverse
traffic.
Yeah. No, I don't want to be 100% depending on Google, 100% even email, or 100%, you know, a push notification. From all these, the email is still the best bet, but, you know, even Google can make any change tomorrow, and then, you know, you don't get the traffic you used to get.
Right. And so you're going down this path, and in different businesses, there's a moment, and there's this guy, Ben Horowitz, who's a venture capitalist in the city for Andreessen Horowitz, and he has this term that he likes to use, WFIO, WIFO, and what that stands for is, we're effed, it's over, meaning something goes so horribly wrong that you're unsure if you can really recover from it. Were there any of those moments? It sounds like the Facebook traffic thing could have been one of those moments, but you're a very calm, cool, collected guy. So I don't know, did you ever have that panic? Did you ever hit the panic button and say,
yeah,
this is it. We're effed. It might be over.
I think you never lose that as an entrepreneur, is that you don't know what's going to happen, right? Like, what is the right decision? So several times I was thinking, okay, should I sell now or should I wait? If I don't want to wait too long because maybe things change and then my traffic goes down and then the value of my company is much less. I cannot sell it anymore or nobody wants to buy it.
Right.
Or I was also, because I was only writing about soap operas, and soap operas are there are only four airing, like only four in the United States. 10, 12 years ago, there were like 12 or 13, like, you know, the soap opera got canceled. So I was also, you know, thinking, oh man, what happens if two soap operas get canceled? Then I don't have content to write about, or less content.
Right.
And then nobody will buy it. So that was like, you know, when, for example, the soap operas would re-sign the contracts with the networks, like those were the times, man, shit, should I sell it? Should I not? Like,
right.
Trying to get information, you know, trying to get inside information from the networks, you know.
So did you talk to any of the soap opera folks? Do they know who you are?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And did you have to pretend? Were you like, oh, I'm a huge fan?
Oh, so sorry. So not me personally. I didn't talk to them, but our writer team, yes. So after I hired the first one, she already had connections with networks and soap opera actors, and then some of our other writers, one that lived in LA, he knows all the publicists and the networks. And so we got also, you know, exclusive interviews with soap opera actors. We got the spoilers for 2 weeks out, you know, so we write more about like what's going to happen tomorrow,
right,
all that stuff. So we had some, but I didn't do it. And, but even if
you didn't have to pretend.
And I would not do that either. Like,
you wouldn't have have pretended. You would have told him, hey,
yeah, like I never watched
an episode.
I don't watch it. You know, I'm sorry. But I love the audience. I love, you know.
Love the traffic.
Yeah, love the traffic. So the fan base is amazing.
And so when you advise people, if somebody came to you for advice, mm-hmm. are you one of those people who says, listen to what I say, not what I do, as in follow your passion? Hey, I'm not doing that necessarily with the topics I'm writing about or the companies, kind of the customers I'm serving. I'm not one of, you know, I'm not scratching my own itch. Mm-hmm. I'm not super passionate about that space, mm-hmm. but you do it anyways. You think that's a good strategy, or it's just a strategy that works for you and maybe not advisable for others to follow?
Yeah. So that's also, I think, one thing why I don't really like, because nowadays in the news, in your Facebook, you see so many of these so-claimed gurus and then the 6 steps to this and the 4 steps to that. And, right. you know, it makes me cringe because what works for me doesn't work for somebody else. I think you really, you know, every person is different. I think what worked for me will not work for a lot of other people. But in my case, I think my passion is not so much the content, doesn't really matter. My passion is the entrepreneurship, the journey of starting something, not knowing what the outcome is, and trying to find creative ways to make it happen. So for me, I like, you have a product, a service, a content, a soap opera content site, whatever it is, and then you have traffic that you need to drive there. So for me, it's like figuring out, okay, how can we get as much traffic for as cheap as possible from point A to point B.
Right.
And that's, for me, the game that I like to play.
If you were selling paperclips or cardboard cups, exactly. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
It's the game of driving traffic, customers, or however you see it, from point A to point B as cheap as possible.
Love it.
So that's a little bit my...
You get to the end. Why did you decide to sell? Why not keep going? Because at this point, it's a money printer.
Yes, I was very lucky that in content, you, with a very small team, very low overhead, you can make good revenue.
And we're talking monthly, you're pulling in
between $400,000 and $500,000 in revenue, and overhead was, you know, hundred, you know, depending on the month. But we were a very small team. In the house was me and 3 others, and then a handful of writers. Right. So it was a very small team. We had a person doing the ads, a day-to-day person that runs everything, and then a video host and editor.
Love it. So you have this cash cow. Why sell?
Because you don't get often, you know, multi-million-dollar offerings, you know, like, so I thought it's a life-changing.
So somebody just came to, or did you go out and market it?
So first I wanted to see, hey, can I even sell it? Mm-hmm. So initially I went to ask one of the advisors, Dave Nemitz, one of the founders of Bleacher Report. I asked him, hey, how much do you think I could sell this? Right. Mm-hmm. Like, and he brought me in touch with an merchant acquisition mm-hmm. person or a guy, however you say it. And I hired him and he shopped it around. And, you know, I got some meetings with some companies that were interested in buying it. I got horrible offers, like, you know, like one time my revenue, for example.
And 1x revenue.
1x revenue. And then maybe with a little bit of cash, and then the rest of the money, I had to wait, like, you know, 4 years. Every month I would get a little bit, you know.
They're trying to drip you your money.
Yes. It's like the private equity play, right? Where they try to repay or pay with the cash flow from the business.
Right.
So that was not worth it. Then I reached out to the broker. I used to work with Quiet Light Brokers. I bought and sold a couple other smaller sites through them. But I always thought, oh, this is too big of a website. I don't know a lot of people that can afford, you know, or can buy.
Did you go in with a number in mind?
Yeah.
I think that's hard for entrepreneurs, right? Somebody says, well, what would you sell it for?
Yeah.
You're like, shit, if I know, you know, I, some days I wake up and this is worth $100 million, and some days I wake up and I say, take this off my hands.
Yeah.
You know, so did you have a number in mind? How did you think about it?
That's true. Like a lot of, especially entrepreneurs that are married to their idea,
right.
They think their company is worth way more than it actually is. By that time I had, you know, friends that are in the same industry, and then you kind of get to know, like,
what's standard.
Yeah. Or like, oh, this site sold for XYZ. And so you can see at different valuations. So I had a number in mind that was actually way lower than I actually sold it for.
Right.
And I went to the broker. I said,
hope that guy's not listening.
Yeah. Well, this is an interesting story too. So the broker, how that works with, when you go to a broker, they just look at your last 12 months of profit, and then they put a multiple on it. Mm-hmm. So if you did $1 million in profit, they can sell it either between 2x and 5x, depending on the industry, the trend, you know, traffic sources, all kinds of stuff. So when I started the process of selling through the broker, you know, at that time, whatever I was doing in profit, it came down to a $5 million
multiple.
Multiple, $5 million. So I said, okay, yeah, I will take $5 million. Started the process, but the whole process takes months too.
Right.
So like, because you have to get all your paperwork, you know, all your P&Ls and all your data room, so to speak, and then a summary and interviews, and then you start talking with potential buyers. So in those months that pass by, my revenue just skyrocketed. So I told the broker, I called him, I still remember, like, I felt so bad because I felt, you know, oh man, this broker has worked so hard on my deal. And now I'm going to call him saying, hey, you know, $5 million is not enough. Like,
right.
I want to stop, you know, the I don't want to sell it at this moment. Just wait for a couple more months. Then the value is much higher. So I called him and I told him the story. I said, listen, you know, like, this happened, and he totally understand it. So what happened by me pulling the listing, whoever was already interested in it now wanted
more,
even more.
Right.
Like, I wish this was a genius
great
plan of mine.
Yeah.
This was a pure, like, just happened. So a couple days later, whoever first offered $5 million to say, okay, I want to, I offer $6 million. And then another, so there was a bidding war between initially three bidders and then two. And eventually I had to choose one of them.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And so by then you're like, hey, this is a good deal now. I'm happy with this deal.
Mm-hmm.
You take it, you sell the company. Painful process or was you know, standard transaction?
It's an emotional roller coaster because it's a lot of money on the line. My biggest issue was like, okay, can this person really close, like, mm-hmm. at the end of the day? Like, because you go to due diligence period. So first,
right. It's not all about price. You also need the certainty that they're going to deliver and they're going to close.
Yeah. So once you agree on a price, you sign an LOI, letter of intent, and then they have X amount of weeks to dig into all your numbers. One big mistake, one of the many mistakes I made was my books were not as clean as I'd supposed to. Like, I had other websites. I had just one LLC, one bank account, you know, at very scrappy basic.
Ramon's lab of experiments were all on one books.
So we had to go literally each item of all bank statements, each line item. Okay, this is not for the soap side. This is for that. Like, we had to go through everything. Their lawyers, my lawyers, their CPA, my CPA. So it was a very painful, long process. And of course, there's now looking back for it is easy. But at that moment, I think, oh man, maybe they're going to change their mind. Maybe, you know, maybe in between the due diligence period, my traffic, you know, Facebook makes another update and my traffic goes down and they pull the deal, you know, like that goes through your mind the whole time. Like, man, you know, let's hurry up. Yeah, it took 2 months and the buyer had some issues too that one of the investors pulled their funding 2 weeks before closing and stuff like that.
All the adventures. Okay,
yeah.
So it ends up closing. Does your life change? I mean, this podcast is called My First Million.
Yeah.
I think I remember, you know, thinking, hey, if I had $1 million in the bank, then my life would be so different. Then I would feel this way. I would act this way. I would spend this. I would do this. In reality, from doing this podcast, talking to people, that doesn't seem to be the case. What was day one of that life for you?
It's super, and I always screw up this word, it's
anticlimactic.
Climatic?
Yeah.
So anticlimactic because I remember when the money came in the bank and, you know,
Just hitting refresh over and over again?
I did. I was looking for it. And of course, I took a screenshot. But I got some champagne for the office. We did a toast. And then literally like 15 minutes later, we all were back
answering
to work.
Emails. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it was. And the next day, you know, at night, I had to pick up my son, cook dinner. You know, it's just normal life. And then the next day, he went back to the office and just work.
What did your son say? He was 8 years old at the time or something. So does it register in his brain, you know, what this means?
No.
He
didn't care. I think it's different when you have really no money and then suddenly you win a lottery and then the next day you have a lot of money. This, even though it was relatively quick, 2 to 3 years, but the website was already doing, you know, really well.
Very profitable.
So if I wanted to buy something, most things I could already have bought, you know. So there was not something, oh, if I sell this, I'm going to buy, you know, this and this and this. Like, I didn't have that. It was just, okay, now on to the next journey, so right. to speak.
And so we got about 10 minutes before they kick us out of here, but the the questions, you know, what happens then? So since then you've bought a handful of other websites.
Yes.
Again, like a real estate guy, you sort of buy it, you try to build it up, you either run it or you sell it from there. Was that a good idea or bad idea? Are you happy with how you parlayed one thing into the next, or yeah. would you do it differently? No. I can see that look on your face.
Yes, because you know the answer already. But yeah, no, what I wanted to set up was sort of like a PE kind of setup, like a private equity where I could buy, you know, undervalued internet businesses, you know, make them better and then resell them. Mm-hmm. Mistake what I did was I bought from totally different, there's no synergy for the properties I bought.
Right.
So all the properties are profitable, but it would have been just make more sense now looking backwards if I had just around one topic or one like industry. So it could be I could scale it easily. I need less people,
right.
less headache.
Or one business model, right? Because you have a SaaS company.
Yeah.
It's like that's a B2B company.
Yeah.
And then you have a content site.
Yeah.
You have an e-commerce, you know, a pet site.
Yeah, exactly. And you need different skill levels, different kind of people, different models, different ways how to drive traffic.
Right.
So it's not that focused. When I started, so one thing was on my mind, how to drive more
right.
traffic. And now it's like, oh, we have a, you know, B2B, like we need a sales team for this. Oh, right. we need, you know, a content site. We need, you know, different things. So
and
we all live and learn.
And now you have a new project, new idea that you're cooking up.
Yes.
Almost back to the roots a little bit in terms of what you're doing. So let's talk a little bit about what you're doing. I'm super excited.
Yeah.
I'm come on as an investor because I think that this thing is going to be big. So tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah. So very quickly, Novely is actually a platform where people can read short romantic stories, short romantic novels, books on their iPhone or tablet, either read it or listen to it. So it's a book, but also an audio version. Me and Sam came up with the idea. We were back and forth. We are really good friends. We always come up with weird and crazy ideas. And we came up with this idea when I still had the soap opera website. And I still had access to all these readers. So we thought, oh, people that like soap operas probably also read romantic novels. So same story, put a really ugly, simple WordPress site up, had somebody write a couple short romantic stories and drove traffic to it, see the engagement, see people like it or not. And the engagement was crazy. People were literally like begging in the comments, like, oh, we love this chapter. When is the next chapter? Things like that. But then I started a process of selling the soap site. So I put this idea on hold, so to speak. Okay, we can figure it out this later.
Right.
Yeah. A couple months ago, we just revisited and now we're building an app and it's going to go live in a couple months. It's a same demographic, you know, like the middle-aged woman that like to read romance novels. Think of these novels that you growing up saw at the supermarket or the gas station, right. you know, with this cheesy book cover.
Yeah.
Know.
My mom has read, I think, like 55 Danielle Steele books.
Yes, exactly.
I think some article came out saying she's written more novels than anyone. Like she's got like 300 days on the, you know, 300 weeks straight on the bestseller list yeah. or something crazy with different books as she, you know, she's a machine.
Yes.
And then there's, you know, obviously 50 Shades of Grey, there's Twilight, there's all these kind of franchises that have been built in this same kind of, you know, romantic fiction genre. And so you see something there. You think that that this romantic stories or romantic fiction is big.
Well, the category is huge. There's a huge amount of people reading this kind of books, but it's also people that read romance novels are also very frequent readers, meaning mm-hmm. on average in America, a person reads 5 books a year. The average romantic novel reader reads one book every 2 weeks. Like you said about your mother, like she read many
right.
books, right? So it's not a lot of people, but also they read a lot of these kind of, and there's a lot of subcategories. You know, you have like, you know, from vampire romantic, you know, stories to right. 50 Shades of Grey to the really cheesy ones. Like it's, you have a lot of subcategories as well.
I remember as a kid, I used to read every sports fiction book I could get my hands on.
Yeah.
And I think one day I crossed over into that, and one of the books in the sports fiction was like a sports romantic fiction or something. I remember taking it home, reading it. First 10 pages, I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
By the 15th page, I was like, all right, I'm finishing this book. This is a great book.
Yes.
As an eighth grader, I remember that.
That's so funny.
So, yeah, there are all these subgenres just within it. And so, you know, what does success look like? What do you think? Where do you want to be with this project, with Novelty, you know, 6 months from now?
6 months? Well, 6 months is...
Okay, maybe 12 months.
Yeah,
12.
Okay. 6 months, we hopefully will be, you know, launched and have a good number of downloads. But in a year, we want to be at least at 100,000 active users and build a platform, not just for readers, but also for writers. I think because I had a lot of writers in the Soap Hub time, I think writers are very undervalued nowadays. It gets more and more difficult for them to make money, and for different reasons, you know, more competition, Amazon, probably things like that. So we want Novelty to also be a really good platform for writers to make more money, have access to their audience, communicate with their audience, with their readers, and get also more exposure.
I think this is a great idea. I think that the writers getting that opportunity,
yeah,
it's very hard to make a living writing now.
Yeah.
So knowing that, hey, if I publish here, I'll get readers and I'll get money. Then on the other side, for readers, you know, there's a reason Netflix paid like $100 million for one more year of Friends, or, yes, you know, The Office is the number one show, is because people love this comfort and familiarity with content. They love that if they can just push a button and then they will feel a certain way. It's like push a button, get an emotion.
Yeah.
And that's really what comes of, you know, if you build a platform like this, because somebody will be able to push a button, they'll know what they're getting out of it. It's not like opening up Amazon and saying, here's a bookstore.
Yeah.
Go find what you want. This is saying, hey, you want to, you know, here's a great story. It's a romantic fiction story. And they'll be trained to say, hey, if I want that feeling, if I want that type of entertainment,
this
is the app to go to.
Yeah.
I really think this has a lot of potential. I'm excited to see what you can do with
it. Yeah, we're excited too.
And all right, it's great. So we'll wrap it up there. Ramon, it's been awesome having you here. You know, I would normally say, hey, where can people find you? This is your chance to shout out your social media, wherever.
Self-promotion.
But, yeah, I don't think you even have anything there.
If somebody has I always like to help and advise, or you know, if people have a specific question, they can find me on LinkedIn. If you look Ramon Van Meer,
right,
then you can shoot me a message.
Awesome. But, well, thank you so much for coming. It's been awesome hanging with you. And I believe we have a Spartan race this Saturday to go to. So
yes,
I will see you in the mud
yes.
very soon. My
All friend. Right.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, buddy.